All stations, all stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to American Vindicta. So we have on with us today one of our most favorite and most requested guests, Mr. Timothy Alberino. Tim's a good friend of mine. We've known each other for years. He's a hell of a researcher, a ufologist, explorer, and he's one of the leading guys in the skill in this field, up and coming. And I love nothing more than to ask Tim questions, especially about the paranormal, the UFO, the alien stuff, because you know, we really don't ever get the answers that we want. We get canned speeches and we get repeated stuff, but we really don't get the intellectual forethought like someone from Timothy Alberino's type of skill set. So I'm honored to have him on as a guest occasionally, and I know you guys love him. So we are going to be probing his mind like the aliens do some of the bubbas in the backwoods. Tim, thanks for coming on with us.
Yeah, well, it's good to be back with you. I don't know how much intellectual foresight you're going to, what was the word? What was the way you put it?
we're going to poke and prod you.
I don't know how much intellect you're going to get out of my brain today, but we'll see.
Nah, we'll get something. All right, let's get right into this. So pre-show, we were talking about topics, and you know, we've covered so much when we do these types of conversations. I want to ask you, what is the connection that you can think of between the paranormal experience, the poltergeist experience, the UFOs, the Bigfoot, the orbs, the grays, you know, the portals? Why do all these things seem to come together for certain events at certain locations like Skinwalker Ranch, the Stardust Ranch, a few other of these ranches that are pretty famous? There's a couple of them that are out in Colorado, along with the cattle mutilations. There's so many things going on there besides just the abductee story. What can you make of that?
Well, the plain answer is that I have no idea, but I will attempt to articulate some of my thoughts about this. First of all, those are very different scenarios, the ones that you mentioned. You know, all these ranches, the Skinwalker Ranch, Bradshaw Ranch, Stardust Ranch, and all the other ranches that supposedly are paranormal hotspots. There's a lot of press around these locations, and they attract a certain kind of people. And so I think that they're a lot more prosaic than people would imagine. I think chances are if you and I were on any of those ranches tonight, we probably would not experience anything. Although there is, at least on Skinwalker, I don't know about the other ones I mentioned, but at least on Skinwalker, there is a measurable phenomenon taking place on that ranch. Now, the nature of the phenomenon cannot be known, because if we are dealing with, say, gray aliens, then we have to understand first and foremost that human perception is in play and the manipulation of human perception. And so the way that we perceive events is both subjective and subject to manipulation by extraterrestrial forces, or extra dimensional, or however you want to put it. So I think that there is a whole lot of exaggeration and misconception and misperception when we talk about the mixing of so-called paranormal activity with what we might describe as technologies. For example, the Bigfoot incidents in which seemingly paranormal things happen during encounters with Bigfoot. Well, first of all, there may be very simple scientific explanations behind what we think is occurring. I mean, this is the nature of this is the nature of understanding, of increasing one's scientific knowledge of the natural world. So people in the Middle Ages, for example, used to think that diseases were carried in the fog, or that certain diseases that we know today are caused by bacterias or viruses were the handiwork of the devil. In other words, that it was a direct result of demonic activity, that people would get sick in certain ways, or a witch's curse, a hex. And we've sort of grown out of that and have come to a much more, as I said, a much more rational scientific understanding. When we invented the microscope, for example, we were finally able to see into the microbial world and understand that diseases were being spread, propagated by these bacteria, by these tiny, almost inconceivably small creatures that you otherwise could not see. And so suddenly, some of these notions were immediately dispensed with, right? Because we now have an answer, rational answer, to something that before seemed supernatural. That's a very rudimentary example, but I think it applies. So we have that going on. People are seeing perhaps technology that they don't understand, or seeing some facet of physics that they have not been able to comprehend, and attributing it to the paranormal or the supernatural. But then you also have the propensity of human perception to be manipulated. So human perception is very easy to manipulate, very easy. Our brains are subject to manipulation every day. I mean, our brains do very strange things. And if you are dealing with a telepathic species, such as the Greys, then they're tapped into your psyche on a level that we don't really understand. And so we are at a disadvantage immediately if we are in the presence of a telepathic species, because they can read our minds and perhaps control our perception, and we can't read theirs. And so if the Bigfoot creature, for example, has these capabilities, if the gray aliens certainly do, then as soon as we're in their presence, we can't trust what we see. And I think that those two explanations account for much of what we call paranormal, and much of what we would attribute to supernatural activity as it pertains to these cryptids and portals and alien abductions and all this other stuff. I don't venture into the world of the traditional fare of the paranormal, which is ghosts and spirits. I don't venture into that world because it has the consistency of pudding in your hands. There's nothing you can hold on to. There's nothing solid that you can make sense of. It's all subjective. All of it is subjective. It is not an objective phenomenon that can be measured. And as much as these ghost hunters try to do this, many of them are just scamming you with editing and different kinds of tricks that they use to make it seem like things are happening. But there really is no objectable way to investigate the so-called paranormal. So does that mean that I don't believe that, you know, in spirits or something? No, it doesn't mean that at all. It just means I know nothing about it and can't. And I'm not going to pretend like I do, because it's unknowable, really. It's very subjective. It's highly subjective. And so many people will object immediately and say, yeah, but I had this experience. This happened to me when I was sleeping, and then blah, blah, blah. And I saw this in my bedroom, and I saw this in the woods. Well, that's great, but that is a personal, subjective experience. We have no idea what state of mind people are in. We have no idea how suggestible people are. And we have no idea if their perception was being manipulated. Or if they just simply are simply exaggerating mundane events. For example, I once filmed, we set up, I was in the desert Southwest filming with Steve Quayle and Tom Horn. And we were staying in a hotel, and we set up, me and my camera guy at the time, we set up our camera to take a time lapse of sundown and then into the night. And we let it run pretty long. Actually, we probably forgot about it, and it simply ran out of batteries overnight. So I found the time lapse on my computer, and I played it back. And what I saw was quite astounding on the camera. The camera was oriented towards some low mountainous hill structures. It's in desert Southwest, which is very dry and arid. And so we were taking the time lapse of the light, you know, going down and the sun going down behind the mountains. And after the sun went down in the time lapse, you saw all of a sudden all of these dozens of lights that were streaking across the camera. And they were leaving these long trails of light, and they looked very bizarre. And my first reaction was, oh my God, we captured a UFO highway. I mean, we are in the desert Southwest, after all, where there's a lot of strange activity. And it was very exciting at first for me, because I thought, what in the world is this? This is amazing. Just these things are zooming all over the place on the screen. And it took me about 1 hour before I realized that these are airplanes. And that when you take a time lapse of the sky in any given night, if it's clear, you're going to see the same thing. It's a phenomenon that happens when you take a time lapse. Now, had I not double checked and made sure that I wasn't looking at a UFO highway, I might have ran with it, put it in the film, and then looked like a complete idiot afterwards. So what I'm saying is, people see things all the time. And because they have no understanding of what they see, they jump to paranormal and supernatural conclusions, because we are by nature very superstitious human beings. We are by nature very superstitious. And so I think that, as I said, very prosaic answer is going to account for a lot of what people see, a lot. And so how do we know about portals? How do we know about Bigfoots? How do we know about all this stuff? Because people talk about it. They have experiences and they come forth and talk about it. Subjective. I'm not discounting subjective experiences. They're fascinating. But you can't draw conclusions from them. Really, you can formulate opinions, but you can't draw definitive conclusions. Now, let's pivot to a phenomenon that you can draw definitive conclusions, the abduction phenomenon. Because the abduction phenomenon is different. It is not a subjective experience in the sense that it's a one-off. You have this strange experience. Maybe there's somebody else in the world who's had a similar, very similar experience, but most of the time, these paranormal experiences are one-offs, and they're very personal. Not abductions. People all over the earth, millions of people, experience the exact same thing. Or at least, generally speaking, the same kind of thing. And it's systematic. It can be correlated. It can be researched. And you can create a body of data. You can make graphs. And you can come to a rational understanding of a phenomenon that is clearly occurring, not in people's minds, but physically happening to people all over the world. That's the abduction phenomenon. And there is a very large body of evidence for the abduction phenomenon. And I think we've already gone into that on your show. But
and you can go into it if you want to.
Well, I would not ever conflate abductions with the so-called paranormal or supernatural. I would never conflate those two things. Because, again, one of those things you can research and it has data and you can draw definitive conclusions. The other is wholly subjective. Now, you can make the case that people who experience poltergeist activity often, you know, go through the same things. But a lot of that has to do with how you feel and how you're perceiving the event. Because if you have pots and pans that suddenly fly out of your cupboards, you're going to be terrified. And any sane person is going to be terrified. And you're going to go through the same emotions. And so there are going to be similarities, obviously. But you're never going to be able to build a body of evidence that can be correlated and that can be scrutinized based on poltergeist activity, because it is so subjective. So subjective. In fact, when people experience encounters with ghosts, for example, it's often associated with things that are personal to them, you know, dead family members or something like that, or something, some ancestry of theirs. It's always a very personal thing. Whereas an abduction episode is very impersonal. It's systematic. It's a program.
The thing I see about the abductions is the amount of trauma behind it. Through my past with investigations, I've experienced people who have been physically abducted, kidnapped. I've talked to the victims. I've talked to people who are victims of the attempt of kidnapping, human trafficking, domestic violent abuse, you name it, right? And I know what a traumatic person dealing with post-traumatic stress syndrome looks like. And then my question to you is, are we seeing the same type of PTSD amongst the abductees, or is the screened memory kind of blocking some of that at times?
Well, I call it PTASD, post-traumatic abduction syndrome. Because people who are abducted, I think I got that right. people who are abducted often experience the same things. Like, for example, and it's very comprehensible why they experience these same things. They often lose sleep. Abductees often find themselves feeling like they did not sleep. Like, not that they didn't get good sleep. Like, they did not sleep. They felt like they instead were up all night doing some rigorous activity, although they have no recollection of it. I mean, that's one very simple example. And so obviously that lack of sleep accumulates over time, and it causes all kinds of problems, stress and low energy levels, and it affects your life tremendously. That's one thing. But aside from the stress, and it's an undefined source for the stress. It's you cannot put your finger on it as an abductee. You kind of have a sense that something weird happened, but abductees are not supposed to remember an abduction event. They're not supposed to remember. There's a block, and there are screen memories. If they try to access their memories, they have to circumvent screen memories. And so when you see people interviewing abductees on a podcast or something, unless that abductee has already been, let me call it, professionally debriefed. And what I mean by that is subjected to subjected to hypnotic regression or very simple, very simple techniques to make sure that they're wholly relaxed and that they, because when you're in that kind of a scenario, when you can get somebody into an extremely relaxed position, they're able to recollect things better. Anybody, actually. So, and then the person has to be interviewed several times, probably, you know, half a dozen times in order to extract, in order to separate fact from fiction, in order to separate actual events from confabulation. As if you read the work, for example, of Dr. David Jacobs, you'll find that confabulation is a real problem, and people who are experienced and have become experts simply by the sheer number of people they've worked with and debriefed and interviewed, they know how to navigate around the screen memories, and they know how to separate confabulation from actual fact. And it's not a one-off process. It's not just you interview somebody who says they're abducted, and you know, and that's it. And then you extract from that. You begin to build your understanding of how an abduction unfolds and the things that happen. No, because there's a whole lot of junk information in there, filling in the blanks. For example, an abductee will often fill in the blanks with just sort of things that make sense to them, or again, screen memories or whatever. And so it's not just like sort of a one-off kind of an interview and then, oh, this is what happens during abductions. No, it's a process. And I don't do it, by the way. I don't do that. I talk to abductees, and I might know how to talk to them and ask them questions better than somebody who's never studied the material, but I am not someone who should be considered an experienced or qualified interviewer of abductees. If we're trying to extract hard data, I rely on the people who've already done the work, and I don't even know that any more work really needs to be done in that field, because we have an understanding. We're not going to learn much. I don't think we're going to learn a whole lot of new information. We would probably get sort of an update on where the program is, how far along it is, how advanced it is at this point, but you're going to get the same kind of information. And so why do I say that? Because number one, when I talk about data related to the abduction phenomenon, I'm not talking about just some average Joe interviewing on a podcast and have an abductee. That's not how you extract the proper data. That's not what I'm talking about. And the second thing is that when properly debriefed, when properly interviewed, that data can be correlated and it becomes functional. It becomes a body of work that can be researched. And so just to highlight in people's minds the difference between paranormal stuff and abductions, where these are in two different worlds. I mean, now there may be some similar things that happen, some similarities between sleep paralysis, for example, and alien abduction. But that doesn't mean that they're the same phenomenon or have anything to do with each other.
Well, let me ask you something. As someone who's done these investigations, and I've collected plenty of witness testimony from victims, arrestees, and also officers, especially after any type of use of force incident. When we were trained how to collect these type of statements, one of the things that we want to know is more or less, I want to put a picture in your mind to recreate in your mind what happened. And I'm more or less going to coach you through it as we talk, right? Walking you through the process, because people sometimes get caught up with little things when I want to get a full picture first before I get into detail. And the problem with people, you know, I mean, for people who have been in fist fights, shootings, rapes, car wrecks, you know, terrorist events, you have auditory and visual exclusion. So that means there's going to be a point in time where you're going to get tunnel vision and your ears are not going to hear everything except for what you're looking right at. And then we get a little bit deeper into it, and then you hear the dog barking. And what this does, this regression talk, all right, especially with officers during shootings, is we give you the initial, hey, what happened, so we can make a report. And then we typically give you 72 hours before we talk about the shooting. And then as this is going on, this report can be updated for months because, as in courts will show you, there have been time when officers, because it is a traumatic event, even with all the training that you get, you can forget things that you physically see, saw yourself, did yourself, said yourself. Even if we have it on camera, you can tell me that you don't remember it because the brain can block things out. And this is without, you know, the screen memories. So it can take months to get a full idea of what happened in one type of shooting, one type of fist fight. But yet, when I read these things about some of these victims of the abductions, sometimes it's a one-off investigation by a ufologist from MUFON, and then they move on to the next person. I'm like, that's not doing this person justice for such a traumatic event. This will take many, many different sessions.
Yeah, you have to be interviewed about the same. If you really want to extract accurate data, you have to interview the person over and over. I mean, you can't just do a one-off. Otherwise, you're going to get a very different data set. I mean, you're going to get a whole lot of confabulation, and it takes a trained interviewer to work through that stuff. And I'm not saying that I'm not saying I am one. That's not what I do, but I do read the material. And so, and I appreciate those kind of researchers. Not sure any of them are doing it anymore. I always reference the same group of people because I think they're the most competent and unbiased. Beginning, of course, with John Mack at Harvard, but you know, Mack was still convinced that we were looking at a psychological phenomenon more than anything. He was wrong. But he had a lot of good research. And then you had Carla Turner, and you had Bud Hopkins, and of course, David Jacobs. And all of them have passed except Jacobs. And those are sort of the old school abduction researchers. And not to say that I agree with everything, all of their conclusions or methods or whatever, but it is good data. It's good data that was collected by competent people using, for the most part, methods that were as scientific as they can be in a realm like this. So abductions, alien abductions. So, and it's just overwhelming. I mean, when you look at the data, the conclusion is apparent. This is a physical phenomenon with, as Carla Turner would say, virtual reality scenarios injected into it, in which your perception is hijacked, and you are shown things that they want you to see while they're doing the very routine procedures that abductions go through, for the most part. So, and this is an interesting point. Let's talk about virtual reality scenarios, because I don't ever, hardly ever, perhaps never, hear people talking about what Carla Turner called VR scenarios, virtual reality scenarios. And I think she was very keen for identifying that. And you know, one of the only people who remembers that and appreciates it that I've spoken to is Richard Dolan, the ufologist Richard Dolan. And a virtual reality scenario is exactly what it sounds like. It's a scenario in which you are experiencing a 3D world, interacting with things, and you can be standing there in the corner interacting with this world, but you know, you don't have a headset on like like the technology today. You can be standing in the corner interacting with this world or sitting in your chair and you're completely engrossed in it, but everybody around you just sees you sitting there, comatose, basically. So in other words, it's happening only in your subjective perception.
Hijacking the mind.
Hijacking human perception. And it's that's not supernatural. That's not paranormal. That's technological. And so we can do it now with, but we have to put a headset on your, on, you know, over your eyes and on your head. But we're getting close. I mean, you know, we can imagine a future in which you won't need the headset. You'll be interfacing directly through your brain with these virtual reality worlds. It's coming very quickly. Well, you know, Elon Musk made a comment the other day on Twitter that it's they're already in the trial phases, they're getting ready to start trials with human subjects for the brain internet interface, the Neuralink. So virtual reality scenarios happen not just in abductions, not just during abductions, but anytime that you are in an environment where entities with this technology are operating, you are subject or maybe subject to the perceptual hijacking, the virtual reality scenarios. And so if that's true, then let's assume for a moment that it is, then subjective accounts of what we think are paranormal activities suddenly become not so reliable, right? So because we can be shown things rather than actually observing what's happening, we're being shown an alternative reality. We're experiencing an alternative reality. And this is done, of course, to control you. For example, let's hone in for a moment on Skinwalker Ranch. I recommend everybody read Hunt for the Skinwalker.
Great book.
By Knapp and Keller. Yep, Keller and Knapp.
Great book.
It's a fascinating read, very well written. And of course, it documents the NIDS research group that was doing scientific investigation on the ranch, funded by Bigelow. And they found some fascinating things. I mean, just absolutely fascinating, mind-blowing things happened on that ranch. And this was an investigation done by with very empirical standards and by very rational people. And still, lots of really crazy things happen. So it's a fascinating read. But a lot of it, a lot of the book, so you have the actual investigation, but then you also have the stories that are recounted. And this is, the majority of the weird things that happened in this fashion. The recounting of things that happened with the family that lived, that occupied the ranch. And it's a pseudonym in the book. It's not the real name of the family. And this family experienced all kinds of weird things. Like, you know, they refer to one as they call it the immortal wolf. I think that's what they call it.
The bulletproof wolf.
The wolf that would show up to this family, would see it, massive, humongous, like horse-sized wolf that you wouldn't die. I mean, you could unload a magazine into it and it wouldn't die. It wouldn't bleed. But they also experienced their dogs getting incinerated by orbs. Yeah. They experienced all kinds of things. The wife one day came home and from the grocery store and had all of her grocery bags with all of her groceries. And she, you know, organized all the groceries into the cupboards, walked away, came back, and all the groceries were out of the cupboards.
And back in the bag.
Back in the bag. So
yeah, she had her hairbrush go missing.
Yes, all kinds of things like this. And of course, people would say, well, see, that's paranormal. But let's just take a different track of thought for a moment. Let's assume that there is an alien base under that property, and not just that property, maybe very, very large. But part of it is under that property. Let's assume, okay? And these entities do not want people living in the vicinity. They don't want them there. Remember, all of this activity by the Greys and whatever other species may be active in our atmosphere and on our Earth, it's covert. They're not waving flags around and blowing horns and letting us know they're here. They're not communicating with us. They're not. It's all covert. They don't want us to be aware of their presence. They don't want us to know what they're doing or anything about them. And so if there is a base beneath that ranch, then it would make sense that the Greys would attempt to drive people away. Now, if they just up and killed them, then that would draw more scrutiny. It would draw more attention.
But why kill the dogs?
Because I'm not sure. That was an encounter with the orbs. Dogs tried to jump and grab the orb and it zapped it.
When you talk about Skinwalker Ranch, we have a plethora of problems. You have the alien creature that scared the hell out of the new age guy.
Subjective. We have no idea if that's true or not.
Well, once again, it's witness testimony. All right.
Right.
Everything that we get, to include even the abductees, is witness testimony. You say subjective, and I'll come to you from a law enforcement perspective. I take every witness testimony. Doesn't matter.
Well, it's subjective, but not just subjective. Subjective in the presence of alien technology. That's what I'm trying to say.
There was so many technological problems on that ranch with surveillance. And things that don't make sense. And we're not talking about uncredible guys. You know, we're talking about
guys with
an E&R in front of their name.
Well, it would all make sense. I mean, I'm sure it all would make sense in the context of a base under that property. And the aliens are trying to do exactly what they do with the abductees, by the way. They're trying to mask their presence. They're trying to see people say, for example, this was very common early on, when evangelical Christians began to take an interest in the UFO phenomenon, it was very common to say, and still is today, that demons are masquerading as aliens. But after I read enough materials about abductions and the phenomenon in general, I drew the opposite conclusion. It is my contention that aliens are masquerading as demons. In other words, a lot of this poltergeist activity that happens to abductees and perhaps in the vicinity of these bases and places they don't want you to be, they being the Greys or whoever, they are going to employ their technological capabilities to affect your perception and your psyche and to drive you away, or to cause you to draw other conclusions about the things that are happening. They will do things, I would, in that scenario, that are completely nonsensical, to throw you off the trail of a systematic technological, or I should rather say a rational technological explanation. Throw you off of that trail. That's the one they don't want you to draw. And so you can imagine all kinds of things happening. And actually, what's interesting is I had a conversation with the late Kevin Burns before he died, like in 2020. Or I believe he died in 2020. Kevin Burns was the president of Prometheus Entertainment. Prometheus Entertainment is the company that produces the Skinwalker Ranch, the Mystery of Skinwalker Ranch, the TV show that I think is still running. Maybe it's over. I'm not sure. And also Ancient Aliens and Oak Island and a catalog of other TV shows. And Kevin was very good at his job. He was a phenomenal producer, extremely creative guy. And he was an acquaintance of mine. We were friends. And Kevin called me one day out of the blue, and we were discussing a handful of things, different projects that we were considering maybe doing together, and television projects. But also we started to talk about Skinwalker Ranch, because obviously Kevin's film production crew was out there filming the show. And he didn't know that I was interested in Skinwalker Ranch. In fact, he wanted to put me on the ranch and on the program. But what I find interesting is he asked me what I thought about it, what my opinion of Skinwalker Ranch was. And I said exactly what I just told you. I believe that there's a base, as crazy as it sounds, there's an alien base under that ranch. And they are messing with the human psyche and human perception to throw people off the trail of a technological explanation and to drive people away from the residents who live there, to drive them away from the property. And his reaction to that was, that is exactly what I think is happening, based on their own investigations and based on what he knew about the ranch, having studied it and for the production they were filming, and having his crew having experienced some things too. He drew the very same conclusion and was very intrigued that I thought that as well. And the reason I bring that up is because I was actually very close to going on the ranch. It fell through and sadly he died shortly thereafter, within a couple of months of that conversation. So I believe that a lot of the experiences that happen on that ranch happen for a reason. They're not random, although they appear to be completely out of the blue, nuts, you know, crazy random occurrences. They're not. There's a purpose for much of it. There's a purpose for it.
What's the purpose for the hitchhiker?
Refresh my mind on the hitchhiker.
So there's been a lot of accounts of visitors to the ranch, you know, for little things, just delivering stuff at times. And then there have been special guests who have come, and then certain investigative groups have come out there. And when they left to, like, let's say, go back to their hotel.
Oh, okay. Yeah. If the phenomenon follows them. Yes. Yeah, the phenomenon follows them.
It follows them.
Yeah.
What do you make sense of that?
Maybe this scare the living daylights out of them, so they stop investigating, stay away. I don't know. Is it possible that there's some kind of demonic activity involved in this as well? Sure, it's possible. I don't discount that. That's also possible. But there again, who knows what's going on? I mean, who knows? Who knows if you're talking about technology that we already know because of the abduction phenomenon, virtual reality scenarios, and technology that is meant to screw with your perception, then anything is possible.
Well, let me ask you
something. And it's not to say that the Greys, by the way, understand what we're doing. I don't think that Grey aliens understand television production crews. I don't think they even understand, you know, what we're trying to do when we're putting drones up in the air and when we're dragging these rudimentary, you know, GPR units over the ground. I don't think they know what the heck we're doing. There's no reason for me to believe that they understand why we do the things we do.
You think they take it as a threat?
I just think they're trying to throw us off the trail and keep us away. I mean, do they know that History Channel, that there's a thing called the History Channel, and they're filming a television show on that ranch? I very highly doubt it. Because these beings, they don't think like human beings. We're completely These things are foreign to them.
But what about the hybrids then? Wouldn't a hybrid have given them the intelligence that
the hybrids would know? I mean, unless the hybrids works, unless somebody took the time to explain to a hybrid, for example, hey, we're filming a television show. What's a television show? Oh, it's a show that, you know, you can watch on your TV. What's a TV? I mean,
right.
It's this thing that you can see people, you know, they're actors and they're doing what's an actor?
So it's wrong to think
they know nothing.
It's wrong to think of a hybrid as you and me in our
completely
form of intelligence.
No, they're like a 2-year-old kid in terms of their understanding of what's going on around them. They know nothing. They know nothing about human society, the way we think, why we think the way we think. They don't know anything about our history unless they're taught by abductees. They only know what they're taught. And that's why they're being taught. And so I don't think we can look at a phenomenon like that if it is an alien phenomenon. And we should not look at it and assume that they know what we're doing. They don't know what we're doing. They don't know. They don't necessarily even know that the human beings inhabiting that property own it, like have a deed. Why would they know that? Why would they even care to know that? Number one, but why would they know that? They don't. Why would they understand our economy or the way that we perceive property? They would just look at it as these people are too close for comfort.
Let me drive
them away.
Let me ask you a few questions. All right. For one thing, you talk about technology and we talk about the poltergeist activity where you turn around, you put something up, you turn back around, and it's all out of place. When we talked about the cattle mutilation scenario that happened here on our homestead, your explanation is that they have the ability to bend time to their will.
Well,
through this is a hypothesis that you gave me.
Well, I mean, not exactly that. I believe, let me preface this by saying that I believe that Bob Lazar told the truth back in the 90s, that he was a part of the experiment, that he was a part of the program at Groon Lake, and that he was assigned to work on the matter-antimatter reactor. He explains it in great detail, exhaustively, in a very old video that you can still find, hard to find, but you can still find it, where he drives out into the desert in his Corvette or whatever it is and gets out and gives this kind of a cheesy video, but he gives this very scientific and comprehensible explanation of how their antimatter reactors work. And one of the things that he says is that the craft generate gravity waves and they create distortions in space-time around the craft when they're powered up, because they use a matter-antimatter reactor to generate tremendous amounts of energy. The matter-antimatter reaction is one of the most powerful forces in the universe. And antimatter is obviously not science fiction. We can isolate it at CERN and do, but it's unstable and we can't, it's impermanent. At least that's what they say. You know, I mean, the wet dream of the Chinese Communist Party would be to create an antimatter bomb, but that's a whole nother story. So when you charge up this technology and the craft is generating these gravity waves, it's distorting space-time around it. Now, when you distort the fabric of space, you are also then affecting time, because they're connected inextricably. So if these craft are generating gravity waves, distorting space-time, they're kind of in a bubble, their own gravity bubble, their own space-time bubble. Now, that's not to say that they're 10 years ahead of us or something like that. No, I think that it's a very small distortion. In other words, maybe 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes difference inside of that space-time distortion bubble. And so maybe 2 minutes different Who knows? And so whereas you might have been standing next to your cow, walked away for 5 minutes and came back and the cow is suddenly dead with no blood in its body and, you know, its anus cord out or something like that, which is very common. You may think, I was just here. It's only been 5 minutes. But that may not have been the actual reality when that saucer hovered over that cow and it was in a space-time distortion bubble. So what seemed like 5 minutes to you may have been 10 inside of that distortion, is what I was saying. And so, and I don't know, I'm not a physicist. I don't know exactly what the differential would be there, but the difference between being inside of that gravity distortion bubble and outside of it. But there would be some difference. I know enough to know that there would be some difference. And
do you
so
think the Grays can project that technology outside of the craft?
I don't know. And I don't know. And I don't see why they would. That technology is primarily, that's the propulsion system of the craft. They don't do it in order to change time, I don't think. I think it's just the propulsion system of the craft. The craft is moving in a gravity bubble. It's moving in its own atmosphere, really. And Lazar explains it as it's really tumbling forward. It's falling forward rather than flying. And it's really a very clear and I think extremely well articulated explanation, Lazar's. Makes perfect sense to me. The little I know about physics, and I have studied this to some degree so that I can try and wrap my head around it as a layperson. But so the point is that when you have technology like this in play, just like my example with the microscope earlier, if we can understand that the matter-antimatter reaction is creating enough energy to distort, to generate gravity waves which distort space-time around the craft, then we can answer a lot of questions. We can answer the question of how it is that, you know, 5 minutes ago you were standing there looking at your cow, you walked away, and then suddenly the cow is in the condition I just described, because more time elapsed than you think. And also couple that with the technology that's being employed. I mean, they might be able to, you know, drain the blood and core out the anuses of those cows like we process whatever, like we process carrots or something.
Well,
you know?
that is something that the NIDS research team monitored, surveyed, and took many different samples of and investigated deeply on that ranch. And I never cared one bit. It was a cool story. My wife and I were listening to the book on Audible. I think I'm like 200 books deep in Audible now. So that was my first Audible book, actually, was that book. And, you know, we're sitting here thinking to ourselves all night, man, wouldn't that be weird if that happened here? The next day it happened. Now, as someone who, you know, I spent 15 years in the government, I know some people are going to say, you know, I'm all these different types of things because I work for the government. But in my realm of law enforcement, if you get caught lying, you get giglioed and you get fired. So if you are going to make any type of substantial claim, paranormal, whatever, I mean, man, you're going to get put in a box at work and you're going to get the shittiest jobs possible. And you don't want to be that guy, right? You don't express your problems at work. And I was so taken aback. I had to ask guys at work, like, how do you explain this? I'm a very rational person. What I see is what it is. I try to explain most things away, and sometimes I feel like I can. And there are some times when I'm like, this is completely out of my element, and I need to reach out to somebody else. I had an entire carcass evaluation done. Even the doctor who did it said, I have no idea, except, and I just told him that's an unacceptable answer. And
well, I mean,
what I got was this is not a common occurrence. And there was a point in time when this was a common occurrence. And he pointed to Skinwalker Ranch.
Well, yeah, I mean, a lot more. I mean, the San Luis Valley of Colorado, it's still happening. And I think to a great extent. So, and in other places, of course. And the government really sort of harassed the farmers who were the cattlemen who were reporting it. And so they probably just quit reporting it. Like, what's the point? They can't stop it. The government can't do anything about it. They call us crazy or whatever. They disbelieve us. So what's the point? So I think people just don't even report it anymore. But I assure you, it's still happening. And I would guess probably to the same scale or perhaps even more so than it was before. So when you have advanced technology that is inconceivable to us, then and let's be specific again. Let's return to the matter antimatter reaction inside of the reactor that produces enough a tremendous amount of energy that would be required to generate gravity waves, which bend space time. Well, there's other things that answers other questions regarding associated with the UFO phenomenon that people oftentimes regard as supernatural or paranormal. For example, the fact that that these craft disappear. Well, Lazar wrote about in his book and has talked about in interviews that when the craft is fully energized, you cannot see it anymore. It's still there. It's still physically there. But because it's distorting space-time around it, it becomes virtually invisible. You can't see it from certain perspectives, at least, like from below. You can't see it anymore. Not because it went into a different dimension, not because it's a supernatural phenomenon, but because it's distorting space-time. It's fully energized. And it's literally bending space-time and therefore light around it, and you can't see it. And so that's a very, again, as I keep using this term because it's the one that comes to mind, it's a very prosaic, very interesting, very scientific, but a very prosaic explanation for something that people think is spooky, is supernatural, is paranormal, when in reality it's just technology. It's just physics.
What do you think about the times when the military will catch a triangular-like object that you cannot see with the eyes, but they can pick up on thermal and night vision?
It would be the same kind of thing. It would be some sort of technology that is rendering it invisible in certain spectrums. And now I'm not saying that paranormal things. I want to reiterate this. I'm not saying that paranormal things don't happen, that unexplainable things, no matter, you know, what kind of an understanding you have of physics, do not occur. I absolutely think those kinds of things occur, and I've experienced things in my life, again, subjective things in my life that make me scratch my head. I mean, sure, and I don't have any explanation for those. I'm just trying to point out that many, many of our ideas and notions about supernatural and paranormal occurrences are matters of perspective and perception and manipulation and all kinds of different, very mundane reasons. And so, and the reason why I brought that up is because you're talking about these ranches. And so the orbs, okay, let's talk about orbs for a second. People post all the time, they print it in books and they post it online, those pictures where you take a picture of somebody at nighttime, usually, or in low light environment, and you have all these orbs floating around them like bubbles. And people say, look at the orbs. Well, that phenomenon is easily reproducible. You can reproduce it. In fact, when I was in Sardinia years ago making a film about giants and doing an investigation into the giants of Sardinia, I was with an individual who was a very superstitious fellow. I mean, very superstitious. And he claimed all kinds of weird things, that he was, you know, in mentally communicating with the giants, and that he would see spaceships all the time flying around, saucers, and which that isn't difficult for me to believe. But he made all these claims, and I discerned that he was a very superstitious person. And he said that people who come to his yard always take pictures, and, you know, a lot of them get pictures of the orbs and their spirits or their fairies or something. And they like to live in his garden. And so, of course, the skeptical person I am, me and my cameraman at the time, was way more skeptical than I was about all this stuff, kind of rolling his eyes even about the notion of giants. So we decided to see if we could replicate the phenomenon. And we did on our very first try. And we replicated it because if you take a picture, and I don't remember all the technical details here, but if you take a picture with a camera in a certain way, you're going to get reflections off of dust and particles and or raindrops or what have you. And the conditions were such that night that we knew we could replicate those, you know, those so-called orbs by taking this picture in a certain way. So we took a picture without doing it in the way that we knew would replicate the phenomenon, and nothing showed up. And then we did it in the way that we knew. And I can't remember what it was right now. All those orbs showed up. And you know what? All those orbs showed up, quote unquote orbs. They weren't orbs. It's a photographic phenomenon that happens under certain conditions. And I showed the picture to my friend, my Sardinian friend, my Italian friend, And I told him that we replicated the phenomenon because here's what we did, and we did X, Y, and Z, and so we were able to reproduce it. It's not spirits. It is spirits. They're spirits. Those are orbs. They like to be in my garden, and people come and they can feel their presence and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, once you start thinking in a certain way, you can get caught in a feedback loop. You know what I mean? You can get caught in a feedback loop, and you have to be really careful. For example, there's a picture that goes around. Now, I'm the guy who talked. I'm the guy over here talking about aliens and giants and all this other stuff and Bigfoot. Okay. So I'm not some skeptic society.
But you're not a sensationalist.
Well, yeah, I mean, I just like to think of myself as a rational thinker to the extent that I can be. But I hold a lot of opinions and thoughts that people would think is absolutely nuts. Okay, so I'm that guy. But there's a picture that's been circulating for, I don't know, 6-7 years on the internet, and it just doesn't die. It just goes and goes and goes and goes. And it's just every couple of months, I know it's going to come across one of my social media accounts, or somebody's going to show it to me on their phone, and it just doesn't stop. And it's not a meme. It's a photo with a caption, and it's a photo of these little terraced walls, and they're terracing walls, and they're at Ollantay Tambon, but the photo doesn't reveal that. It just shows these big terraced walls. I say little, but I mean, they're not super big terraced walls. They're maybe 10 feet tall, each one, you know, it's like a 10 foot wall and then a plateau, and then a 10 foot wall, another plateau. So they look like steps, right? But they're big. So you got people walking around them because it's an archaeological site. And the people are like, you know, they look small. And so the caption is, who were these steps made for? And if you're stuck in a feedback loop, and that feedback loop is like a supernatural, paranormal, Nephilim feedback loop, it's like you have this monocle on your eyeball, and everything you look at through that particular lens. And if you're really obsessed with one particular topic, then that becomes the focus of that lens. And so if you're obsessed with giants, everything you see has to be associated with giants, some way, shape, or form, like my friend in Sardinia. Everything had to do with giants to him. Everything. And so that's like a feedback loop. So that
I get the same problem with people in conspiracy theories.
Well, yeah, of course. So that picture, who were these steps made for? It's supposed to indicate that these steps were made by and for giants, because they couldn't possibly obviously be made for regular sized people, right? And it just keeps going and going and going and going and doesn't stop. But the answer, the correct understanding of what you're looking at that picture is very boring. It's very mundane. It's not sensational. Those are agricultural terraces at Ollantaytambo. 100% for sure. I've been there like 8 times. Those are agricultural terraces. And in and of themselves, actually, they are quite fascinating because the Inca were experimenting. They were like doing scientific experiments with crossing certain breeds and trying to be able to grow corn at different elevations. And they were absolutely ingenious. I mean, it really is what they were able to do, the Inca with terraces. I mean, I could talk for an hour on that. It's just absolutely amazing. But it's not going to be interesting to somebody who just wants to see giants everywhere, because it has nothing to do with giants. They're not steps. They're terraces.
So you think because of this problem that people easily explain away a scenario or an event that happens, when we should be saying this has a technological backing to it, not supernatural. Stop thinking in this realm.
Or we don't know what it is, rather than defaulting to a supernatural explanation for something, or a paranormal explanation. Just a big question mark. I'm fine with question marks. I don't know what it is. It could be a very, very simple answer. It could be an answer that has to do with physics that maybe we don't comprehend yet, or whatever. But the point is that this happens to people all the time, and it's increasing. It's increasing, and that's not a rational way to view the world. A good researcher, a good investigator, and I'm trying to be one, to become one, to learn, okay, because I've made lots of mistakes myself, and I've fallen prey to all of this myself. So I've learned by experience. So a good researcher will not view the world through any kind of a lens whatsoever. You may be interested in a certain topic and you're going to such and such and such a place to research a certain topic. But if you're a good researcher, you're not going to expect to find anything. You're going to go and see what is there, and you're going to allow whatever you find to interpret itself. That's based right. on a set of data or a set of facts. And if there are none, then it's a big question mark. Or you may find evidence of what you were looking for. And that's great. That's the best case scenario. So people do this all the time. The most, I think, the best example nowadays is flat earth theory. People who are absolutely convinced that the earth is flat see everything through that flat earth lens. So every single conspiracy, everything that happens with the moon or Mars or whatever, everything has to be viewed, must be viewed through the flat earth lens.
Hey, hold on. Stop right there, because now the comment section is going to explode on your channel and on my channel. So if we're going to go this direction, let's go this direction. But I have a question for you. For one thing, the film, the photos you were talking about, I think what the little dots that you're seeing, we call those artifacts.
Artifacts, that's right.
Okay, so
photographic artifacts.
So the other thing is right here, I have one of the first prints of the moon. My mom gave me that long, long time ago. And I've always wanted to be an astronaut. Of course, they kind of have weight standards, and 300-pound astronauts typically not favorable. But here's my question for you. Did we go to the moon? Was there something there? And why aren't we back?
Well, of course, I can't possibly know definitively the answer to that question, but it is my opinion that we did go to the moon. My very strong opinion. I'm quite convinced that we did, but that we did not see what the astronauts saw. We were not shown what was discovered there, and we were not the first to go there. And I believe when we went there, we found artifacts, we found evidence of perhaps prior habitation or visitation on the moon. I think that they were being watched by saucers, observed while they were up there.
Santa Claus. And, that's one of the
exactly right. And yeah. And that there are structures all over the moon. And I think that at this point, I think that
you believe in
pretty,
the crystal.
That's pretty definitive that there are structures.
You believe in the crystalline structures, the towers.
I think that there are ruined structures as in like buildings,
right?
And some that are in use presently in use. And I think there is a lot of evidence for that. And that's a rabbit hole. But I think there's a lot of evidence for that. So we went, but the guys that went were not those astronauts they made the greatest discovery in human history, and they had to lie about it.
So one of the things
was there fakery? There videos that were manufactured? Yes. They're never going to show you what they really found. And it makes perfect sense that we never went back. Why? Because do you think that the U.S. military is going to allow NASA to go back after that kind of a discovery? No way. The moon becomes, exploration of the moon becomes the purview, the sole purview of the U.S. military at that point. And that's it. It's very simple. The finds were too important to the military, and they're never going to tell us. So
what stops China from going there and finding it?
Nobody at this point. So, and they are going. They know. I think they're perfectly aware of some of the things that are on the moon at this point. And in fact, people now have access in the commercial world to extremely powerful telescopes that lay people can get. And you can follow some of these people on Twitter, on Instagram. These are amateur astronomers. And they don't have an agenda. They're not, you know, pushing some kind of an agenda. They're just astronomy nerds. And they love taking pictures. And they're beautiful, amazing pictures these people get. Extremely high resolution. It's not easy to get them. But they get these absolutely incredible pictures of the moon and of Mars. Listen, I had and I know this is a rabbit trail from where we were, a digression. But I had he works at the university here in Bozeman. He works at the University of Montana or Montana State. I was confused the two. But he works at the university here in Montana and in Bozeman, I should say. And he is like the guy that sets up their experiments. So he gets all the new toys when they come in. He's got to put them together and he's got to sort of operate them for the professors and help set up the experiments. And so he was given a high-powered telescope, and he had to set it up. So he's dialing it in, and this wasn't that long. It was a few months ago. He's dialing his telescope in, and he knocked on my door, and he said, "Hey, I got this really awesome, expensive telescope I get to play with tonight. You want to come look? You want to? I've got it dialed on. I've got it dialed into Mars right now. You want to come see Mars?" He's like, "You want? Because you know he's been friendly with my kids and." And you want your boys to come take a look at Mars? And I was like, absolutely. We all ran out there, and me and all my boys ran out there. And we looked in this telescope, and man, I'm telling you, it was just amazing how clear you could see Mars. I mean, it looks, and by the way, it looks exactly like the NASA pictures of Mars. Exactly. And we were looking at Mars, and I mean, it was super clear. It was really remarkable. And I looked at it, and my kids looked at it, and then he turned it and he oriented it towards. God, I don't want to get it wrong. I it wasn't Saturn, although we were looking at Saturn, but it was. I want to say that it was Jupiter. I think it was Jupiter. What's the one with the big swirl?
The red eye, Jupiter.
Jupiter. Yeah, that one. Okay, so we've all seen the NASA pictures, and everybody's like, oh, those are fake. NASA pictures are fake. They just CGI it, right? And we all see that big swirl on Jupiter. And I always thought, why is it just always there? You know, like, what's the deal? It doesn't, maybe it does move, but it's always there. Sure enough, I look through this telescope, boom, there it is. Just like the NASA pictures, crystal clear. And I'm not talking about like sometimes you look in a crappy telescope and it just looks like a bright light in the sky, maybe a little bit of definition. No, this is like looking at a high resolution photograph looking through this telescope for the university. And I'm looking at Jupiter and I'm like, wow, it's exactly the way that I've seen in the pictures. And why shouldn't it be? But there, that huge swirl going across the middle. And I saw three moons, or at least a couple of the moons. I could see them in the telescope. And they move and they change position. If you wait, you know, a period of time, you look again, they change position. So this planet has moons orbiting around it, just like we're told it does. And I'm not looking at a photo. This isn't CGI. This is a freaking telescope, a university level telescope. Very expensive. And that was really cool. I mean, it was really awesome. I can see why people get addicted to that. It's just so mind-blowing. Because when you look at it with the naked eye, when you look at Mars, for example, the naked eye, when we were looking at it, not through the telescope, just looking up in the sky, it just looked like a bright dot, like a really bright ball of light, like Mars looks like, you know, a little bigger than a star. But as soon as you put your eye on the viewer, boom, it's that red planet, just like you see it on the pictures. So it's really astounding. And that's, I guess that's another example of how, you know, as we increase our technology, some of these things that seem for so many centuries that seemed like mystical, you know, when we can see it in high resolution and it sort of demystifies it, but it doesn't make it any less fascinating to me. So all the way back around now to those steps at Ollantaytambo, which are not steps but terraces. So people get stuck in these feedback loops, and everybody does. I'm not taking shots at flat earthers or anybody. Everybody gets stuck in a feedback loop. So if you're obsessed with Bigfoot, you know, everything you're looking through that lens, that cryptid lens. And if you're obsessed with giants, everything is going to, in your mind, is going to be associated with Nephilim or whatever. And, you know, people tend to do this. I try as best as I can, and I know you do too, to disassociate when we're doing research investigation, disassociate any kind of preconditions that we have, presuppositions about a topic. Try and disconnect it from what we're looking at and just try and distill an understanding of a phenomenon based on what we can know about it, right? And that, and it's okay to have preconceptions and pet theories and stuff. That's perfectly fine. Everybody has them. I'm just saying that don't get stuck in the feedback loop. Don't get stuck in the feedback loop. If your feedback loop is supernatural, everything is supernatural, then you're going to look at the abduction phenomenon and say, oh, that's just supernatural, because that's what you're used to. That's your default. Well, and I would encourage people to stop doing that, because that's not how you enlighten yourself or become enlightened to new information. You're just going to always stay in the same place, and you're never really going to advance based on rational arguments or data. And there's too many people stuck in all these little loops, man. And then when you hear people, you know, sometimes you'll hear somebody on the radio or something who are talking about, people tend to do the following. People tend to take all of the most fascinating topics in, for example, in this community that we're in, all the most fascinating topics, the Nazis, for example, aliens, fallen angels, Nephilim, Antarctica. What am I missing here? Bigfoot, right? And squish them all together. Just compress them together and force them to be related to each other.
Yep.
People do that all the time. And then they come out with this weird, jumbled, nonsensical, irrational theory because they're forcing these things to be associated. Are they associated? Maybe. But people just, they have to make these direct connections. Now, there's always going to be subtle connections, of course. You make subtle connections, and there may be direct connections. And a lot of times you can find, like, for example, Nazis and the occult. That's a no-brainer. That's a no-brainer, right? But Nazis and Nephilim? That's a stretch. That's a stretch. I mean, I guess you can bridge that gap somehow.
The problem is when people bridge these gaps is you're taking away from what actually happened and you're adding to, and now you're creating lore instead of facts. See, the thing is in investigations, we're fact finding. Okay. Unlike what the FBI does with, you know, the whole Russia scandal, in actual investigations, we're fact finding, we're being objectively reasonable, nonpartisan, you know, you got to understand something, you know, and this is the way that I approach doing these podcasts. I did a 9-part Nazi series, and I did it in the way that I want to find out everything about these limited subjects that I gave myself. I have these topics. I want to find everything out about these topics. And I didn't stop until I found everything that I possibly could. Good, bad, confusing, indifferent. It didn't matter. You make the decision of what you think it is. See, the way ufologists should present themselves, and the problem with ufology is ufology has turned themselves into kooks. They've turned themselves into a big clown show. Most of them are extremely intelligent. They're out in the field. They're doing the real research. And then you have a few guys who are complete jackasses who ruin it for everybody. And, you know, when you try to really bring forth the meat of the subject and people go, oh, this guy's talking about aliens, so switch the tube. You know, it really hurts the investigator's credibility because you get tied to other people, you know?
And the modern ufology is not what it used to be. You know, you had guys like Jalen Hynek and a lot of these old school researchers who were very, very objective, Jacques Vallée, for example, and who were coming at this from a rational approach. And this is the way that ufology was in the beginning. It was it was people who were really interested in seeing if they could find evidence, investigate the phenomenon and find evidence of what it might be, or at least indications of what it might be. And then you had an injection, probably in the 90s and early 2000s, you had an injection of New Age philosophy. It was injected into ufology, and then it just went nuts. It just went nuts. And today you have what's very interesting. I follow UFO Twitter, and it kind of turns my stomach because it's, for one thing, it's very liberal. There's a political, political zeitgeist to it, a political atmosphere on there that is very leftist and so that's one thing. It's a very political space. Let's put it that way. And also it's very, and when I say it, I'm talking to this community of people on Twitter who are interested in UFOs who call themselves UFO Twitter. And it's very conforming. It conforms. For example, and before I talk about the conforming, there's a New Age spin that's always present, and it's very conforming in the sense that it's like waiting eagerly for the government to give them, you know, a document dump. When's the document dump coming? And waiting for whatever crumbs the government's going to give them, and repeating this term that I absolutely hate. And I was talking to you and Dave Hodges about it last night, I think. I absolutely deplore the term UAP, the acronym UAP, Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon. I deplore it. Why? because it's a term that the government gave us. It's the one they want us to use. I don't want to talk about your unidentified aerial phenomenon. I don't want to talk about the UFO phenomenon that you covered up and obfuscated for decades. That phenomenon.
Yep.
The one in which you've retrieved alien tech, crashed alien technology. The one in which you've allowed millions of Americans to be abducted knowingly. You knew that they were being abducted for decades and said nothing. That one. That's the one I want to talk about. I don't want to talk about unidentified aerial phenomena. Trying to change the terminology to cause people to view it as if it's a new phenomenon. And it's this mysterious thing that we don't really understand yet. That makes me angry. Because I know the propaganda.
We have plenty of understanding for it.
You and I are on the same wavelength here. And UFO Twitter swallowed it hook, line, and sinker.
1947 to 1944, Blue Book. 1947 to 48 time frame. You have the crash in Roswell. Then you have, you know, what, over 1,500 different exposures around America to UFOs. Not UAPs, which is a pet peeve of yours. UFOs. And from anywhere from actual military pilots and more especially from commercial airline pilots who were experiencing these airships in the sky. And the entire time Hynek and others are doing this investigation for Blue Book, for the Department of Defense, for the Air Force, they were covering up, threatening. Possibly one person was murdered who was a witness to this. And then there were other events that were happening, and the DNI was involved, CIA was involved, and yeah, the Air Force was involved. And during all this time, guess what you also have going on? MK Ultra, Mockingbird. A lot of things happened at the same time. And right. Then in 1994...
Designed, a lot of it specifically designed to obfuscate the UFO phenomenon, because it's not about lights in the sky. It's not about, oh, I saw an orb. It's about the technology and the entities who made it. It's about what we're able to reverse engineer, what we're attempting to reverse engineer in our black budget projects. It's about what Richard Dolan coined as a breakaway civilization.
Well, why in 94?
It's not about aerial phenomenon. That's a distraction. Those are the issues that we already know are going on, deep underground military bases. And you know, obviously UFO simply means unidentified flying object, but that's not what I'm trying to articulate here. What I'm trying to say is that old phenomena, the old UFO phenomena, is where all the bodies are buried, not in the new UAP phenomenon. And let's try and figure out what these things are. And, you know, Nimitz incident, although that was really groundbreaking and astonishing. But the Nimitz incident, look at this tic-tac, not a tic-tac. It's obviously a saucer, and it's flying through the atmosphere precisely the way that Bob Lazar said they fly. Like, they turn on their side and they like slide through or tumble through space, basically. And that is exactly the way that thing was flying. UFO lore, not UAP newfangled, you know, let's have Congress investigate and try and figure out what this is. It's propaganda.
Yeah.
And UFO Twitter has absolutely been suckered into it. Because they're conformist. It's very conformative. They're conformists. They're liberal leaning. And maybe there's a bunch of UFO Twitter people who are going to hate my guts now.
No, you ask a good question. Let me stop, because I want to give you a breath. Okay. Why in 94, when the Air Force finally disclosed to the Office of Disclosure that there were no threats from 47 to 94, they discovered no threats. There was like 1,200 incidences that were unexplainable. Everything else was explainable. Swamp glass being reflected from Venus and drunk hillbillies in the woods. Okay, but there's a lot of encounters, very reputable, credible encounters that happen that get glazed over because the U.S. government comes and says, hold on, we're the government, we're the experts.
We're going to investigate.
We're going to investigate. So
Yeah.
This was a cover-up.
And everybody claps and goes, ooh, the government's going to investigate. Yes, it is a big deal that Congress is investigating. Why? Because it is a tacit admission that the phenomenon is real. That's all I need to know. I don't care about your investigation. Your investigation is going to draw whatever conclusions that the dumb state, the deep underground military base state, wants you to draw. I already know that. So
this is where the word threat comes in. Why threat now? 94, you didn't say it was a threat. For 30 years, it wasn't a threat. Yet,
well,
like
for 30 years, it was the government feigned non-interest. We're not interested. It doesn't really interest us. That's what the government's line has been. Oh, we're not the Air Force. Oh, we're not really that interested in UFO phenomenon. They just sort of laughed it off. And now all of a sudden, yeah, it's real. And don't worry, we're investigating. And by the way, call them UAPs now. It's like, screw you. I want to create a T-shirt that says, don't say UAP. You know, I mean, sort of piggybacking off the other political issue from Florida. Don't say UAP, right?
Because that shirt for you.
Don't say UAP. Say UFO. I want to talk about the old school phenomenon. I want to deal with the abductions. I want to deal with the reverse engineered technology. I want to deal with the bodies that have been recovered. I want to deal with the agreements maybe that have been made in the past.
Can you talk about that agreement? Most people don't know about that.
Well, that's a whole different subject, but that's, well, kind of a whole different subject. I guess you're referring to the Greater Treaty, the lore surrounding it. It's kind of a tall tale. Nobody knows if it's true or not. I happen to believe that it is, but I don't know. It's a story that revolves around Eisenhower's alleged meeting with a delegation of gray aliens at I always forget the name of the Air Force base. It's changed since it happened. An Air Force base in California and in Palm Springs, California. And Eisenhower allegedly went and, you know, he made up a false story, allegedly, that he was at his dentist. And instead, he was at this base and a saucer or a couple of saucers landed and they interfaced with the Grays telepathically, I would assume, and an agreement was struck. And according to the agreement, the Grays would share some technology with us if we permitted them to abduct some of our citizens. They promised that they wouldn't harm them and that they would give us a list of the abductees. They would keep us informed on what they're doing and who they're abducting. And that was the Greater Treaty, so-called Greater Treaty. And of course, the Grays did not uphold their end of the bargain. We did get technology, but they didn't tell us who they were abducting. And we were left in the dark about that. And the government, and I actually believe that I would lean towards that being true, that story being true, credible. But again, I don't know for sure. And so the government began to frantically try and figure out what the Grays were doing with the abductees and were starting to abduct people themselves. They were abducting the abductees. The military was, those are called my labs, military abductions, and trying to forcefully and very, with great hostility, try and get the abductees to tell them what the Grays were doing, and the military was implanting their own implants to try and, you know, track the people and figure out what's happening on board those craft, because they knew the people were being abducted. So that's true. That part of the story is definitely true. And so it's a very dark, sordid past when it comes to the military and the abduction phenomenon. That's why they don't want to have the conversation about UFOs, because it conjures all of that. It conjures up all of that. And so that's why they've changed the terminology. Don't say UAP.
And that phenomenon never left.
No, of course not. It's accelerated. It's burgeoning. And so, you know, anyway, that was my little vent on UFO Twitter. Not to say that I don't like a lot of the people on UFO Twitter. There's a lot of great researchers and just people who are fascinated by the phenomenon hanging out on there, but it's just so conformist, and it just drives me nuts and very new agey. So
what do you think of this new congressional investigation task force, whatever the hell they want to call it now? I think this is going to be another blue book, another ability to cover.
Yeah, I mean, the cat's out of the bag. UFOs are real. They're technological hardware, and they're not manufactured by China or Russia. That's it. That was the disclosure that came out over the last couple of years. That cat's not going back in the bag. Okay, you can't put that toothpaste back in the tube. It's out. And so now all they can try and do is control the narrative and feign investigations. And as I always say, the people at the Pentagon, most of those people, even the people who are investigating UFOs, they don't know anything. They don't have a need to know. They don't have access to the underground bases. They certainly don't have access to the black budget projects. They don't know. They know less than most ufologists worth their salt. I mean, they don't know anything. They maybe have some reports, secret reports of encounters with UFOs by fighter pilots or whatever that the rest of us don't know about. So what? I mean, we've known that's been going on for decades. So, you know, don't make too much of it, although it is historic what's happened over the last couple of years with this what I think was kind of an unintentional disclosure that they're chasing the narrative that it leaked. They're trying to get a hold of it, trying to change the terminology. It is historic. And I don't think, by the way, necessarily that the government invented the term unidentified aerial phenomena. That was a part of the AATIP program with Lou Elizondo. That was the terminology being kicked around and used in the background of that project. But once it came to light, that became the manifest terminology, the newfangled term. You know, if you're up to speed on the UFO stuff, then you're going to call it UAP. You're not going to call it UFO. You're going to call it UAP. Not me. I don't fall for the propaganda. So anyway, again, as you can see, it rattles my cage.
Well, I think there's precedence because the U.S. government has lied to us since we've had the ability to lie to us. You know, I mean, that is the objective. And it is up to the individual investigator to remain objectionably reasonable, searching for the facts in a non-bipartisan area, thinking, as always, if you're going to present evidence, consider yourself walking into a courtroom. You have the judge, the jury, and then you have another lawyer that you got to get in a battle with. And you got to convince the jury, which is you, the audience, right now. Are we telling the truth? Is this real? Or am I full of shit? Like all these other guys over here, like the government, for 60 years that has lied to us, that has suppressed information. Like you said, I sense your want for the knowledge because many people have been harmed, irreparably damaged, and we knew it the entire time.
Right. The government did not protect.
Didn't warn anybody.
Right. They allowed them to be subjected to ridicule and suffer quietly and alone. The government did that. Now, the government couldn't stop the abduction phenomenon. They were powerless to stop it. But they didn't even attempt to reach out to the abductees and help them. Quite the opposite. If the abductees would talk like Carla Turner, for example, who was an abductee, her and her husband. And her husband was a MILAB abductee, was abducted by the military as well as being abducted by the Greys. So rather than try and protect them, the government was hostile to its own citizens. You know, it's kind of dangerous to talk about that because that, you know, that's not something that the military ever wants to come to light. And when I say the military, remember, I'm not referring to, you know, the people working at the Pentagon. There's a handful of people who have access to the deep underground bases there, but not many. I'm talking about not the deep state, the political machinery. No. I'm talking about the dumb state. The guys that are reverse engineering the technology and have been for decades, the guys that have worked at Groom Lake and run that operation, and the other ones. So, but anyway, I got to jump. But my final thoughts here, if I could summarize our conversation, I would say two things. Don't get stuck in a feedback loop, whether it be giant feedback loop, whether it be Nephilim feedback loop, whether it be Bigfoot feedback loop, whether it be supernaturalism feedback loop, or whether it be flat earth feedback loop. Don't get stuck in a feedback loop and don't say UAP.
Well, Tim, thanks for being on. I almost able to catch you there at the end, but next time we do this, I want you to talk about Men in Black, because I have a lot of information on that, and I think that's a fun subject. Ladies and gentlemen,
it's always fun. It's always fun talking to you, Doug.
Hey, man, it's a good time. Nobody gets to do this anymore.
And we're going to be hanging out soon in the flesh on a secret project. We'll just tease it. We'll tease it like that.
Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. I'll be able to smoke some cigars again
with our buddy L.A. Marsulli.
Oh, yeah. Hey, listen, ladies and gentlemen, if you like what you're hearing, please like, share, and subscribe. You know, it's not very often that we get Timothy out here and he can, you know, tell us what he knows. But I like many of you, I appreciate your work, Tim. I appreciate the honesty. You know, it's a breath of fresh air to hear someone come out and actually care about this subject and not just gaff us all off. So, you know, thanks for the conversation. Look forward to seeing you soon. And ladies and gentlemen, thanks for watching. My name is Doug Thornton. This is Timothy Alberino. Stay frosty. All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.